Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's Monday, March 16, 2009. It's 4 minutes after 9 a.m. Joining me today is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Ellis, Senator Thomas, myself, Senator Stedman, and we'll be joined here shortly by Senator Olson, who's in another committee, overlapping schedule, and we're awaiting the arrival of Senator Huggins from Senator Olson right now. This morning, we're going to start our review of the governor's FY010 capital appropriation bill, Senate Bill 75. We've scheduled most of the week to allow the administration to present each of the agency's capital requests. We're planning to have one meeting in the morning and then continue in the afternoon. I recognize that committee members have other obligations, including operating budget subcommittee closeouts this week. So if you need to be excused, I understand, just go ahead and continue on to those others, and we'll keep the meeting running along. We've worked with OMB on a tentative schedule for the week, but in order to maintain flexibility with the schedule, we probably won't post the schedule until the day before. We're going to try to do is keep on the daily schedule, but we will, so we may finish early, but what we don't want to do is run late. And apparently Senator Huggins is in the air, so he won't be, he's returning from other places, so he won't be joining us today. We're going to take the departments with the largest requests first, and then go down from there. And if we finish early in the morning, we're going to continue on with the meeting. We're not going to stop early in the morning. We'll continue on till the end of the day. And if we finish a little early, it'll be in the afternoon. There's some folks that are flying in from out of town, so we don't want to start the next day's session or the next day's presentation early, as far as a day early. And then we're going to take public testimony on Thursday evening. We've scheduled statewide public testimony from 5 to 7. Again, that's Thursday evening. Members should have two blue binders separated by department. If you take the binders back to your office after the meeting each day, please bring them back with you the next morning. I recommend that you just leave them in the committee room and allow staff to update them as necessary, because they'll take care of that. Plus, they weigh a ton, you're dragging them around. Behind each agency tab, you should see project review listing. This is the order we'll follow. I believe that the DOT one this morning is in pink, but there are multiple colors. White is the original budget submission presented by the administration. Green is the first round of amendments that were February 18th. Then the yellow is a second round of amendments on the 24th. And then the pink is the third round on March 12th. So that would, we want to be cognizant that we're using the latest information. We're going to go ahead and start with Department of Administration. And we have Ms. Nancy Slagle, who's been here as the Director of Administrative Services for DOT. And also I see the Deputy Commissioner of DOT in person, so we'll see along with the Marine Highway. So we'll, maybe we can, before we start going off the list, we're just kind of curious if we're going to, apparently the commissioner has other duties assigned. Mr. Richards, that's a question for you, after you identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Frank Richards, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. The commissioner is not here today. He is actually en route to us, coming down to Juneau tomorrow, and will be here in Juneau for the remainder of the week.
Pardon me?
It will be in Juneau for the remainder of the week, coming in tomorrow.
Okay. Ms. Slagle, I don't know how, maybe you can introduce yourself for the record, and then you guys could start rolling through your projects.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Nancy Slagle. I'm Director of Administrative Services for Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. We can certainly go through these fairly quickly or slow as you desire. The first project is a request for $1,621,000 for ADAC Airport Maintenance and Operations. This is interest earnings on funds that we received from the Department of Navy about 5 years ago to take over the ADAC Airport and to provide maintenance and operations for the airport. The contract that we signed with the Department of the Navy required that the investment earnings on the funds, the $10 million.
Hold it there. Just for clarity, we're on page one. It's back behind the colored ones, the colored amendments in more detail. And then the pink sheets list them in chronological order. So you, just to help myself along, I pulled the pink sheets out, and then you could follow along in the white sheets as far as more detail. Again, that's page one of the, and it's back about an inch into the DOT's, we'll just take a brief at ease here. Back on the record. Go ahead, Ms. Slagle.
Yes, this is interest investment earnings that we have has been generated on the $10 million that we had received from the Department of Navy for the operation and maintenance of the ADAC Airport. The agreement that we had with them is that any investment earnings on those funds that we had received would be also dedicated to the airport, whether it be used for general operations or for major maintenance. So the, as you can see, the fund source for that is ADAC operations.
Just keep rolling along, we'll stop you.
All right, certainly will, sir. The next project is $850,000 for airport deferred maintenance. This is every year we come in for a certain amount of money to deal with maintenance issues at our 256 airports, rural airports throughout the state, where whether it be dealing with lighting systems, whether it's brush cutting or dealing with fence repairs or pavement repairs or any of those types of things that need to be dealt with on an ongoing basis. You should have also some spreadsheets that identify deferred maintenance lists that we've provided as well, and so that we have a listing of the most current listing of aviation deferred maintenance projects that we've put in priority order, and that should be part of your packet as well. So if they do have it, okay, thank you. Next.
Chairman.
Yes, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Slagle, as you look at the deferred maintenance for airports throughout the state of Alaska, what's the number that we are deferring at this time, do you know?
The amount of deferred maintenance that we have identified currently, I believe that Deputy Commissioner Christine Klein had identified it as upwards of 100 million, $100 million for the rural airport system.
Mr. Chairman, my question has more to do with why was this amendment put in that cut? If you got $100 million that's required for deferred maintenance that's been identified, and you have a request here that was actually amended to decrease by $150,000, what was the justification for decreasing the amount you asked for?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, yes, we were asked to go back and review our general fund capital budget request for FY10 because of the revenue situation that the state is in general, to try and find ways to cut back on our budget requests. You'll find that all of our deferred maintenance requests have been reduced from our original request by about 15%.
Senator Olson, I think that's a subject that some of us need to work on, is the question on deferred maintenance and of the different regions and ongoing non-deferred maintenance that just shows up. So I think we'll have a discussion here at the table on how we want to help DOT with their endeavor to maintain the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next project is $400,000 in general funds for the Alaska Aviation Safety Program. This is a program that was transferred to the department this fiscal year from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. These funds will provide a safety project that basically looks at mapping and in areas that are critical to our pilots throughout the state, in those areas, mountain passes, areas, approach zones, those areas that are difficult and provides them with some assistance and some training as well in being able to deal with those. It is a safety program that fits more appropriately in DOT than in Military and Veterans Affairs, and these are the funds to help support that.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Olson.
Is the medallion program under that under this request as well?
Yes, it is.
It is under there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If we could, on a follow-up on that, what impact on the medallion program would this have?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
Well, the question from Senator Olson was, does the medallion program fall under this request? I guess the additional add-on to the question is, what impact does it have on medallion? If it falls under it, what's the effect?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that this, the funds that we receive here go to support the medallion program, which provides the flight simulators.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, as I understand the program, is that the mapping will be used to provide for information that is brought into the flight simulators that is used by the Medallion Foundation. So this is a separate expense for the department, but we are not providing funding specifically to the Medallion Foundation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next item is $2,341,900 for the deferred maintenance necessary for the marine highway system. This is for vessels and facility deferred maintenance. As you know, we have aging fleet, and there's various items that need to be dealt with. We have a list of several items, and typically they're fairly small items.
Have a brief at ease, please. Continue your presentation, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I was saying, the funds we're requesting here are for the deferred maintenance on vessels and facilities. We have about $40 million in top priority projects for the vessels. The listing of facilities is quite lengthy as well. We have 16 state-owned terminals that we need to provide deferred maintenance projects on as well. We have various types of things that are required for us to maintain, including just basic dealing with mooring and the elevators and the electrical systems and the air handling systems and lifeboat and davit types of issues. So those are Marine Highways deferred maintenance. The next project.
Okay, well, before we
yes, sir.
Speedily go on, historically, I think we did two appropriations, one for maintenance and then, or one for shoreside and one for the ships on maintenance. And you've got one appropriation request here, and then I know there was a budgetary reduction, but the backup didn't change. So what's the plan on dealing with the reduction, and why the non-separation of the appropriation?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that this year we may have received separate items for facilities and for vessels. I think typically we've requested them as just one amount. I think they were separated specifically for this year, but generally we haven't separated them. That provides a little bit of flexibility for us as we need to shift between types of projects. The lists that we have are in priority order with the reduced amount of money that we would receive. We would not be able to go as far down our priority list as we would with the additional monies. So certainly some of those deferred maintenance projects that we were going to do next year would have to be delayed until the following year.
So historically it's been one appropriation?
Yes, sir. It was just this fiscal year that I believe we received it separated.
Okay. Yeah, because my understanding it wasn't separated this year, it's combined.
I meant for the current fiscal year that we're in right now. The appropriation we received for this year was separated.
But I understand that.
But we requested it in the FY10 as one appropriation.
I understand that. I think most departments would like one appropriation, and most governors would like one appropriation. So there's, you know, always some concern there as we minimize our appropriations.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman.
So we may want to address that issue. We'll go ahead and continue.
The next item is $9 million for the Alaska Marine Highway System vessel and terminal overhaul and rehabilitation. This is the amount of funds required to continue to overhaul our marine highway vessels on an annual basis and to make sure that they are running in proper fashion and receive Coast Guard certification to continue to operate. The $9 million is the majority of that. It would be for the vessel overhaul. A small portion of it would go towards passenger services and security and safety issues. The overhaul work includes all types of certification requirements that are needed on each of the vessels, and making sure that all of the areas are functioning properly. One area that we need to do is to take all of their lifeboats out and inflatables and all of those types of things, make sure that they're appropriately dealt with and repacked. That costs money every year to do those types of work.
So with your budget reduction, what are you going to not do?
Mr. Chairman, we would not do as many areas of the passenger services, secure safety and security items that we had identified previously in our prior request. It would We would not be replacing computers on the vessels as they become aged. We would not be doing as much of the terminal work that needs to be done. It would be but we would concentrate on the vessels themselves.
So you'd concentrate on the 8.87 million on the overhaul and take it out of the 930 original request to get down, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The next item is the ADA compliance projects. That's for $595,000. We annually come in and request funding to deal with the barriers, the physical barriers to state facilities, to all our state buildings. We have been chipping away at this slowly. We have a very lengthy list of projects that we need to continue to deal with to make sure that all of our buildings are accessible to those who are physically disadvantaged.
If we could maybe back up one, just it appears that the northern route of the Inner Island Ferry, Kaufman Cove, Petersburg, and Wrangell, is not going to run. And the Marine Highway has a terminal in Kaufman Cove and then one on South Mitkoff Highway. So are we looking at any budgetary issues that may need to be addressed to put those facilities in mothball state, or what is the DOT's position on those?
For the record, Jim Beadle, Deputy Commissioner with the Marine Highways. Is what we really have is the dock that's on the Petersburg side. The terminal that's there is a temporary terminal that belongs to the IFA. The Kaufman Cove side belongs to the community of Kaufman Cove. So we will do whatever needs to do to maintain the dock side, but the terminal belongs to the IFA.
Right, which is just a little ADCO trailer.
Correct.
So then the other issue is in Kaufman Cove, and are you saying that's a responsibility of the community of Kaufman Cove?
Correct. And if they wanted to, they can turn it back over to us, and then we would have to do something with it. That's part of the agreement, but at this time, it's owned by them.
Okay, we can work on that going forward, but I think in the event that the northern route is inoperable for the next couple of years, I think we want to make sure that those facilities are saved and not, you know, allowed to go into disrepair, because they're very expensive to build and they're brand new.
Correct. The one at Kaufman Cove is very nice.
Yes. And South Mitkoff's not too shabby either, the dock.
The terminal, the actual dock structure was very expensive, so you're right, we want it maintained.
Okay, thank you.
The next project, Mr. Chairman, is $1.5 million in CIP receipts for the capital improvement program equipment replacement. This is funds that we receive from a overhead percentage that we charge to all capital projects. We use those funds to purchase equipment as is necessary to support our construction program. We cannot charge for equipment directly to projects, and so this allows us to purchase the equipment that's necessary to continue our construction projects. This provides such equipment as copiers, plotters, computers, computer software, those types of things that are necessary for all of our construction projects. The next is $1.1 million in, for the Coordinated Transportation and Vehicle Program, $800,000 of that from general fund mental health, and the remainder from the mental health trust funds. These funds are to provide transportation services for mental health trust beneficiaries in the way of vans or other types of services that are required for to transport them as needed for in the various communities. These are provided through a grant program from our program development division. The next is a $1,150,000 general fund match request for the Corps of Engineers Harbor Program. We only have one project identified here, and that's the St. Paul Harbor project. This provides the match funds that are necessary to assure that the Corps of Engineers program project goes forward for that harbor. And we do have match monies also for feasibility studies to work with communities to help them determine the ability to go forward with future Corps of Engineers harbor projects.
And out in Sabunga, what's going on out in Sabunga? See, there's potential studies include Homer Valdez, Juno Whittier, and Sabunga.
Mr. Chairman, we don't have that specific information. We can provide it to the committee.
That'll be fine.
The next project is $3 million in general funds requested for the design of three bridges on the Seward Highway, the Ptarmigan Creek, Falls Creek, and Trail River bridges. We have those three bridges have are falling apart. They are the timber piles and timber cap beams are the superstructure of that is failing, and we've used general obligation bond funds to do emergency repairs on those bridges, but we need to replace them, and this is the design money to go forward with that, the replacement of all three bridges.
Could I just touch on that geo bond issue and then touch on if these don't qualify for federal, and if they do qualify for federal, why we don't go down that road instead of GEO? Two separate questions.
Right. The GEO bond funds are providing some immediate repair work that is needed to allow for traffic to continue. We have reduced one of the, I believe, the Trail River bridge to one lane.
That's correct.
Traffic because of the weight restrictions on it, and reduce the speed on that as well.
Mr. Chairman, also on Ptarmigan and Falls Creek, what we're going to do to provide for the immediate needs is provide for a Bailey Bridge structures that will go over the existing bridge. So then the Bailey Bridges will essentially span the existing bridges because the piers aren't able to support the heavy loads. Our desire is to be able to have these temporary repairs in place so that the summer traffic will not be so severely impacted. Because as Nancy has indicated, we have put in place not only weight restrictions, but also lane restrictions crossing the Falls Creek Bridge. So the goal is, the immediate need is to use the general obligation bond funds for emergency bridge repairs to do those work that will be accomplished in the summer of 2009, and then use the general fund dollars to be able to go forward and design replacement bridges so that they will then be available to go into those locations hopefully in 2010 and 2011.
And then the issue of federal funds supplanting the GF, could you spin us up on why these projects weren't in the federal fund category?
The challenge that we have with our STIP funds is that the bridge category is now a stovepipe, where we only get money specifically identified for bridges. That means that bridges that we've been working on previously have been in the queue, and the money is therefore allocated to those bridges. In order to get to these bridges in the most timely fashion, we came forward with a general fund request rather than putting those bridges into the bridge queue and waiting for those other bridges to be accomplished before having money available to do the design work.
That begs the question, Mr. Richards, why wouldn't these, if they're emergency, why wouldn't they supplant the other bridges on the list?
Mr. Chairman, the challenge again is with the set amount of funding that we receive for four bridges, that if you have a project that is specifically in the works and we have $20 million or $25 million to use in that bridge category, if we've developed bridges that we're able to accomplish and obligate to that $25 million level, if we knock one of those off, supplanting it with a $3 million, we could potentially not obligate all of that bridge money coming to Alaska, because we may not have another bridge of smaller order, or of the project size wouldn't readily fit within that funding category to be able to obligate the full amount of that bridge in funds coming to us. So it's a very tenuous mixing and matching of projects to the various funding category.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
How does that item relate to the item on page 45, which is an additional $1 million for statewide emergency bridge repair?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, when we get the statewide emergency bridge repair fund would be able to provide for immediate response and actions when there was flood damage or earthquake damage onto a particular bridge, that we would then not have to use existing operating funds to be able to do the necessary repairs to immediately reestablish that bridge. We were very fortunate in this year to have that GO bond emergency bridge fund to be able to draw from to do the existing work that is ongoing right now on the Seward Highway. And our goal would be to have a $1 million fund to be able to do that for other bridges in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think this is a side note. You know, it's, I guess at some point we need to have a discussion if we want to have GO bond funds for major capital projects, or we want GO bond funds to be available for small emergency type issues, like dealing with these bridges of a handful of millions of dollars, which, you know, to me is an area we need to do have some discussion on and conclude why we wouldn't fall back on the general fund for these type issues and use our bonding authority for major projects or if we have a natural disaster.
Mr. Chairman, that will be a welcome discussion. Again, we were very fortunate to be able to have those GO bond project funds available to us for this specific need. If in the future we had another type of calamity and we didn't have a federal remedy available to us to use, we would fall back onto the general fund so we could reestablish that transportation network. These bridges are critical to the Seward Highway and to the community of Seward for not only their wintertime commerce, but their summertime commerce for fish haul and tourism traffic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next project is a $1 million in general funds for emergency and non-routine repairs. This is for not just on the highway side, but on the airports and facilities as well, and allows us to be able to respond to not just disasters, which would be declared emergency disasters, but things that don't reach that level of national prominence. This would deal with, such as we have a request that has come over to you, I believe, on Friday, for a supplemental request for emergency response to the rock slide on North Tongass in Ketchikan, and being able to deal with the situation on that the hillside there, as it's extremely unstable and needs to be dealt with immediately. So those are the types of projects that this funding could be directed towards.
We were fortunate that no one got hurt in that.
Absolutely.
National disaster. A rock embankment came down on the highway, for those that aren't familiar with that. We're fortunate no one was happened to be in direct line of fire to the slide.
Right. And we have some houses that are somewhat precariously positioned at this point.
I think we have another issue similar to that in Sitka, actually, a mudslide a couple, 3 years ago.
The next item, Mr. Chairman, is facilities deferred maintenance and critical repairs. It's a $2,550,000 request to deal with those deferred maintenance items that have been accumulating on our over 700 buildings that DOT is responsible for maintaining. It varies from roof replacements to boiler replacements to HVAC system and other mechanical code compliance issues that arise and have need to be dealt with, and our operating preventative maintenance funds are not able to deal with on an ongoing basis.
So going forward, I want you to, on that last item, I want you to talk about what's the department sees coming at us.
Mr. Chairman, are you asking what we see will be the deferred maintenance needs in buildings?
Yeah, I think we're on page 20, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. 30632. See, out in the future, you're calling for $10 million. 010, $3 million, and then the request now is down to 2.5. So what? The concern is when we're dealing with our maintenance that we don't slow it down to a point where we end up having a snowball on us in 2 or 3 years. So apparently with a $10 million forecast for deferred maintenance, apparently the department feels that they may need $10 million in 011 and 012 and 013. So is this just a response this year to the declining revenue, or is there a response this year to there's not the maintenance needs?
Mr. Chairman, I would say looking forward, we see that there will be and are higher needs out there for our facilities deferred, as well as in the other modes, both in aviation and highways. What we're showing here is a projection of the future that was a response to our development of the 10-year fiscal plan, where we identified what the future program needs would be across the modes. Last year, we were able to receive two appropriations for facilities deferred maintenance and critical needs, totaling about $15 million. And that was a very healthy shot in the arm to these facility needs. And we've been able to put out contracts, get work underway, and are moving forward with that. This particular year, with the downturn in the price of oil, the request was reduced based on the price of oil.
Okay. And of the appropriation last year, what's maintenance issue, what's left, or have you expensed it all?
It's my understanding, Mr. Chairman, that all of that money has been allocated to deferred maintenance projects. And we can provide you an accounting of what that is.
Yeah, if you could.
Certainly.
The goal, Mr. Chairman, was to get those needs under contract as quickly as possible. So we'll provide that.
Mr. Chairman, the next project is $5 million in general funds for the Fairbanks Geist Road Rehabilitation Project. This is the Geist Road connects the Parks Highway to the Johansson Expressway, and this will deal with the resurfacing and paving of that road, traffic control improvements, pedestrian improvements, and signage upgrades.
If I could just stop there and ask a broader question. This is a resurfacing, and there was concern a year ago, and, well, actually a couple of years ago, and particularly last year with the high price of oil and the cost of tar and asphalt, that it was putting the road maintenance budget kind of in a squeeze, and also the contractors that were bidding on resurfacing with asphalt products, but weren't able to get to it in a year or half a year out, and we had a doubling and tripling of oil prices. So when you came up with this $5 million figure, what were you assuming the asphalt price arena is going to be in?
Mr. Chairman, you are correct. Last year, we actually experienced almost 100% increase in the price of asphalt from January of 08 through July of 08, going from about $350 a ton to over $700 a ton in Fairbanks. Those prices have retracted back now. I'm not sure on this specific project what amount of oil, the cost of oil was for this, but we can certainly provide that to you. But we are seeing in the bids that we're receiving back reductions in the commodity costs, the high commodity costs that we were experiencing last year in our bids. And we've subsequently worked over the interim with the local contractors and the associated general contractors to come up with methodology to address the high spike of oil prices, specifically on asphalt pavement, and are working those issues now into our general provisions of our contracts.
So then is it correct to say that this issue, you guys have come to, the department has come to an agreement with the industry of some form of a reset mechanism to allow the risk shift a little bit to the state in case we get oil spikes or spikes in asphalt prices, so the contractors don't have to build in huge margins to protect themselves in case oil goes back up to $100 a barrel before they can get the asphalt down?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. Essentially what it is we're asking that the contractors take the first 7% of cost escalation risk themselves. Anything over 7% will be the responsibility of the state to cover. So that will help them know that if there are major fluctuations as we experienced last year, that they'll have a portion of that risk assigned to them, but then the state will come in and cover the cost.
And there was two concerns. One of them, we'd push our asphalt contractors in insolvency and huge increasing oil price environment, and or they would excessively spread their margins to protect themselves.
We were seeing future contracts coming in with, as you say, excessively high oil costs, and that was very troubling because it shot the cost of the projects up astronomically. Therefore, with the funding that we have to spread across the projects, the snowball effect was being seen that we were not going to be able to do as many contracts and accomplish the work.
And I think for those that are watching at home, that this may be new to them, it's a practice other states use similar mechanisms to try to keep the margins under control and the risk predictable for the industry.
And we were following suit what other state DOTs had been doing in regards to setting or assigning that risk. What we had seen last year was that in our aviation contracts, especially in rural Alaska, where we did not have that provision in place, is where we were seeing the highest cost escalation on oil.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are two projects on your list. That's Fairbanks Nelson Road and Fairbanks Phillips Field that were in our original request. They're shown as being deleted here. They have been added into the federal surface transportation portion of the bill, so they're further back, and that's where they will appear. So they've been taken from general fund to federal.
Okay, and they are?
Nelson Road resurfacing and Phillips Field Road rehabilitation.
But are they in the stimulus contingency? How are they dealt with under the?
They are shown in our regular STIP program.
Okay.
The next project is $680,000 for harbor deferred maintenance. Again, this is dealing with the 25 harbor facilities that we have throughout the state, or mostly in Southeast, but there are some elsewhere that are our responsibility as well. We have deferred maintenance needs of about $28 million in this area, and we have a priority listing also for harbors that you should have as well in your backup.
Okay, and if you could spin us up on a couple of those maintenance issues, and maybe when you do that, touch on Baranoff Warm Springs. That's been an ongoing, lingering maintenance transfer issue for several years.
Yes, for the list, Director.
Yes. We can provide you the list if we haven't provided it to you already. Oh, you haven't. Okay.
Well, I'm asking for you to specifically address
Baranoff Warm Springs.
That one, if you want to do it at another time, that's fine. If you want to get back with more information to the committee, that's fine also.
Mr. Chairman, specifically on Baranoff Warm Springs, it's the issue of with the city and Bureau of Sitka, it is the definition of what is replacement and what is within the upgrade or the maintenance improvements and replacement program is truly a definition, the definition of what is addressing what were maintenance items and what are specifically looking to be upgrades in terms of the space requirements. So that was the challenge that we have in terms of the existing facility trying to just replace what was there and not adding additional square footage, what was driving the costs greater than what we had originally had in that location.
I think there's a difference of opinion or interpretation, I guess, as far as footprint. The footprint issue is one issue. The other issue is it was in a capital budget a couple of years ago that was vetoed, put in by the administration, then vetoed by the administration, and then as time goes on, we have escalating costs. As referenced by the department, every year we delay a program or a project, it gets a little more expensive. So I guess it gets a little more involved than some of the interpretations, but I would think that the differences of opinion could be rectified as far as the footprint without too much difficulty.
Mr. Chairman, I've met personally with the City and Borough of Sitka Mayor and Assembly, and then have staff working directly with their public works folks on the specific question, and I truly hope that we will be able to come to a resolution on the funding that we have available to be able to accomplish that project. Right now, we appear to be still with different differences of opinion.
Also, there's an interest over the last several years as the state moves on and divests themselves of these harbors throughout the state, that they're picked up at the local level, and particularly by the end user, the folks that use those harbors or use those facilities. And I hope that the trend continues, and we're a little careful on our maintenance of these docks, and also which ones we potentially build or rebuild and continue to own as we move forward. So I think that list still needs, there's some more privatization on that list, privatization, meaning going from the state to the municipal level, that needs to take place.
You are correct, Mr. Chairman. We, again, as the funding request shows, it's a relatively lower dollar amount for harbors deferred. We have been reducing the number of harbors through divestiture to local governments and partnering with them. That increase of cost that you talk about in terms of being able to repair the facilities to be able to transfer is a concern of us, and we will be presenting coming forward then with future requests with hopefully accurate numbers that have been agreed upon by the communities before we present it to the legislature.
And back on that one issue, dealing with Warm Springs, Burn Off Warm Springs, I think after the original veto, the legislature did appropriate an additional sum of money to get that situation rectified and moved behind us, and it was removed again on Burn Off Warm Springs. So at some point, we need to get that taken care of, or remove the dock, or have the folks that use it pay to maintain it.
Understood, Mr. Chairman. The challenge, again, with those remote facilities is being able to have someone stationed specifically there during the high use period to be able to charge a fee and have someone and the cost of that service not exceed the potential fees that we would be receiving. That's been one of our challenges, looking at these, certainly these remote facilities and the users that are using them.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to go into these items in too much detail on this, but the most mortgage participants don't want to pay mortgage. It's recognized that whatever you charge is always a little too high, but treating everybody the same is a little more equitable. So having some areas of the state that have a free dock built by the, maintained by the state for the residents to use, and then having most other marine facilities, people pay to use them. And when they object to paying their fair share, I'd like the department to remind them the cost of just one piling, much less a dock, just the pile sitting in the harbor. And do you happen to have a ballpark estimate of what a galvanized steel piling driven would run in the average harbor in the state?
Mr. Chairman, off the top of my head, I don't have that cost, but I can certainly provide it to you. And we do have those challenges where folks see that the facility is provided to them as a state asset and it should be free to them. And that's always a challenge as an agency that has a responsibility to maintain them, to identify that it's not necessarily free, that it is coming from the general fund, and that all the citizens of the state are paying for that facility, and that the users, as you've suggested, in state-owned as well as in city and municipally-owned harbors, are paying fees so that it's equitable and justifiable across the board.
I think pilings are measured in thousands of dollars per pile.
Yes.
And numbers around 10 grand. So maybe you could get back to the committee on the last couple of harbors that were done, what the contractors were charging per pile. And just as a ballpark estimate, so the committee members here that aren't as familiar with costs of marine facilities. We'll see that it's extremely expensive, and the harbor fees they charge are very reasonable relative to the cost of putting this infrastructure in.
I'll be glad to provide that to the committee, Mr. Chairman. And as a harbor user myself, I pay those fees for the use of that facility and gladly do, because it provides me then access to the marine environment with good floats and a good dock.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead and continue on with the.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is no request this year for deferred maintenance and transfer of any harbors, which we typically do. As you said, we are trying to divest ourselves of some of these harbor facilities, and we have been working on with a couple of communities that we're not quite ready to accept those harbor facilities, and so that you don't see a request this year for any of those transfers. We will not come forward with the request unless we have a resolution and a consensus from the community that they would accept the responsibilities for that harbor and agree on the deferred maintenance dollars. The next item.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does this also include docks, or is that a separate category?
I believe that is included.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, are you talking specifically about the harbor deferred maintenance?
Well, I was wondering if the department has had further thoughts on the Bethel dock facility that was in the works to be transferred. I believe that that is a regional facility that should be operated, at least supported by the state of Alaska. It's not only for Bethel, but for all of the surrounding villages. And I know that the department has been quite adamant to try to turn that responsibility over to Bethel, but it's not just Bethel that benefits from that facility. And I was wondering where the department was on that particular project.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, my understanding is that we are still in conversation with the city of Bethel about that, specifically about the uplands portion, which we were trying to transfer to the city, and the ongoing maintenance of that dock facility is, I believe, currently the responsibility of the city of Bethel.
Well, I'll have to check with the mayor. It was my impression that he also felt, and the city also felt, that that was a regional facility and should not be the responsibility of the citizens of Bethel to maintain.
And while we're on that subject, there's a few years ago we established a harbor construction 50% capital match fund to help expand and construct harbors across the state, and then have them set up as enterprise funds at the local level, so we don't have this issue come back to the state again. And I'm just kind of curious why the department didn't there's roughly $15 million, I think, in request in their capital match. In the last couple of years, we did $10 million per year. What the department's thoughts are on constructing and expanding waterfront along the coast for economic enhancements, and why that there wasn't a request to capitalize this fund.
Mr. Chairman, when we looked at our capital budget with the governor's office, there were items that did not make the list. There was the target amount of the capital budget was set, and certain projects did not make it. The ongoing harbor program has been successful with the communities, and they are supportive of it. But right now, there's with the funding cycle, with the price of oil, we don't have the funds available.
The next project, Mr. Chairman, is a harbor program development. It's $350,000 in general funds to continue the work of coordinating with the Corps of Engineers and local governments regarding specific projects and harbor-related work. This provides some assistance to them and oversees those harbor programs. It also provides a little bit of funding for updating some tideland surveys as well. The next project is $2,750,000, of general fund dollars for highway deferred maintenance. We again have a very large backlog of deferred maintenance projects. These funds are typically used for brush cutting and road surface repairs and refurbishment, erosion protection, drainage, and those types of deferred maintenance projects that need to be dealt with on an annual basis.
If we could kind of just stop there again, and And if it's later on in the request, that's fine, we'll deal with it then. But the ongoing maintenance of the DOT facilities, you know, the original request, there was a reduction here of $250,000, is that correct?
For highway deferred, the
A little more than $500,000.
It was $500,000.
Yeah, $500,000. So what aren't we going to do under that reduction? There is concern from different regions. You know, I get more information, I guess, out of the southeast region, and I'm sure, you know, Senator Ellis gets a lot of information in and around Anchorage. So we all get, you know, fed from our different respective areas of the state. But there is a concern on the maintenance level, regardless of the budget situation the state's in, but just the general response from the citizenry wanting a higher level of maintenance of DOT facilities, particularly roads. Not so much staff buildings and stuff like that. I recognize that's something that the public wouldn't be as in tune to, those type of conditions, but the road conditions. And so I guess I'm concerned on, you know, when you reduced it by 500, you know, what's taken off the table, and we may want to have some policy discussion on the legislative side on what we want to do with DOT's maintenance.
Mr. Chairman, what specifically will not happen will be essentially activities such as reduced levels of brush cutting, reduced guardrail repair, reduced asphalt surface maintenance, reduced lighting, light mast repair. The money that we receive, we put out on the street in both contracts as well as using state forces to be able to accomplish the work. And so we target the money that we get and we spend it down to meet to the funding that we are provided. If we are not able to perform the work, it means that we may have to, for brush cutting, for example, it would be that we wouldn't cut the brush on a particular road every 3 years, maybe we have to cut it every 4 years. That just means that the height of the willow and the will be that much higher when we have to come forward with a contract to be able to accomplish that work.
Well, I see here you've got an Anchorage District Road Surface Repair and Mat-Su District Road Surface Repair, right? You know, if you ask me a road in southeast, I'd have a pretty good idea of the condition of the potholes, but I don't have a good feel for Anchorage, and Mat-Su. So what can you tell me that can convince me that we should allow the reduction and not actually look at what the governor put on the table and increase it to deal with the citizens' concerns?
Mr. Chairman, specifically on asphalt surface condition, we have roads that are deteriorating. We have literally over $300 million worth of ruts that have, within our central region alone, that need to be replaced. And that's where, when you have a depression in the roadway now greater than 3/4 inch, we are concerned in tracking those so we'll be able to come up with capital programs to be able to address it. What we use in terms of surface repair maintenance funds within the deferred maintenance is doing crack sealing, it is doing banding, it is doing thin overlays where we can, or patches where you have a major or minor subsurface problems, but it'll take a 100-by-100-foot patch to be able to do. Not a large major rehabilitation type project, but those minor ones that we can use these funds and get the work accomplished.
I think that's a discussion that the committee members should have as far as what degree of maintenance dollars we should be addressing towards DOT. Again, the concern that I get from the southeast region is that there's not enough maintenance dollars going in. And normally if there's a problem that's broadly across a particular region, it's actually broader than that. And I would expect that this issue is deals with all of the major regions that DOT is, and I recognize the fiscal constraints that the state is under today, but also the concern I have is that we don't get ourselves into a position where the deferred maintenance snowballs on us. And I recognize that, you know, the budgetary pressures the department's under, and I respect those, and I see you're, you know, addressing the reductions that were requested by the administration. We may be looking at it from a little different perspective. And again, it depends on the committee members and what their wishes are. But from the southeast region, from Juneau South, there is not enough maintenance dollars going into the region, general maintenance. And from what I've been told, that we'll be hearing that same issue surfacing in central and in the northern region this next year. So that's something that for the members to think about, and we'll collectively come to a conclusion on how we want to deal with it. But don't be surprised if your numerics changes.
Mr. Chairman, we welcome the conversation in terms of maintenance, because it has been one of the challenges that the department has had to administer the existing general fund budget that we receive for the operations in light of adding new facilities over the years. So we'll be able to show you how we've tracked the cost of maintenance, the additional facilities, and then the loss, essentially the buying power that we've experienced due to inflation over the years.
Okay. We'll go ahead and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next project is $900,000 in general funds for the highway maintenance vehicle replacement and safety equipment. This is to assist us in purchasing highway equipment, maintenance equipment that's needed to be replaced, either that we kept older equipment that's no longer, that's fully depreciated and we do not have the funds to replace that equipment, or that we have pieces of equipment that the maintenance costs are excessive and they need to be replaced. And this provides the funding to do that.
Mr. Chairman, this is one of the challenges as we see the vehicles that we're purchasing having to meet the ultra low sulfur fuel requirements is now with air emission quality standards. We're seeing the high cost of these vehicles hitting us hard. And I learned of an engine replacement last night that just literally 2 years ago would have been a $20,000 engine replacement for a snowblower, is now approaching $45,000 to $50,000 for the cost of that particular engine. So that's just one example of how the equipment costs that we are seeing is impacting our replacement budget. We don't have the funds to be able to cover those existing costs.
I think we put in some money for a snowblower in Petersburg of $65,000. So at what point do you just not park it and buy a new snowblower?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, are you saying you put $65,000 in for maintenance or for replacement?
No. This is a grant to a community to buy a snowblower. And I'm not saying the snow machine or snowblower, I'm not saying that because I don't know the relative scale of the two you just mentioned, but just that number that you threw out on the table, at some point it's cheaper just to buy a new machine and melt the old one down.
That's true. Mr. Chairman, I believe the snowblowers that we are using specifically on our airports, we get them in a multi-carrier configuration so we can do snow blowing, we can do sweeping, and we can do plowing. Those are now in the approximately $700,000 range.
Okay. Different snowblower.
Yes.
Okay. But you're absolutely correct, Mr. Chairman, that we have to look very closely at the reports that are generated by our equipment management system to see what the level of maintenance has been provided on each of those pieces of equipment to see if it is more cost effective to replace them rather than to continue to try and maintain them. The next project is $100,000 for of general funds for infrastructure and erosion control design and environmental permitting. And this is specifically in the areas where we are dealing with coastal erosion and flooding, but in those communities that are at risk. And those communities that are impacted by this is Shishmaref, Kivalina, and Unalakleet. Those we are looking at continuing. We had received some monies for this. In the current year, this will supplement that activity in doing site surveys and material source investigations and hazard mapping and geotechnical and hydrological studies to determine where we are going with and how to mitigate the damages for to those communities.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Where does Newtok fall in the mix? Or do they just fall in the ocean?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, Newtok is progressing quite rapidly, and with the support of the military, we'll actually have work underway this summer. We have a barge landing that will go in first, and then there will be an access road leading up to the evacuation center and ultimately to an airport. So there is currently funding available for Newtok. This particular funding was looking at those other villages.
Mr. Chairman, there's the further down on the list, a couple more projects. You'll see one for Newtok specifically for the materials for the relocation site.
Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you. The next project is $400,000 for general funds for the Koyukuk evacuation road. This is for reconnaissance study and preliminary engineering and environmental work and design for an evacuation road for that community to deal with those flooding issues as well. Next project is $123,000 of general fund dollars for measurement standards and commercial vehicle enforcement equipment replacement. This is specific to the measurement standards portion of that division that deals with protecting the consumer. This is equipment that needs to be replaced, the Anchorage scale testing unit that is that tests large commercial contractors, freight operators, and railroad systems, and the wheel loader weigher calibrator, which is portable scales, basically also for testing on weighing commercial vehicles for size and weight enforcement. The next project is the Newtok materials for the relocation site. This is $2 million in general funds for earthwork required for the construction of the barge staging area and the evacuation center road and the camp facility construction staging area as well for that community.
Mr. Chairman, this is essentially locating, or we've identified a material source, and it will be opening up that material source for the needed projects.
The next project, Mr. Chairman, is $500,000 for the Ports and Harbors Long Range Transportation Plan. This is, we received $250,000 last year to begin this planning process with the Corps of Engineers and the Denali Commission in identifying the ports and harbors needs of the state as a whole. This $500,000 will help continue or complete that project and provides the match funds necessary to match the Corps of Engineers money that's being provided for that effort. The next project, Mr. Chairman, is $250,000 in general funds for the Quinnahock Old Airport site remediation. We had an old airport that was moved to a new site. This is remediation work at the old airport site. It was on leased land, leased from the Native Corporation. They are very anxious to have us deal with the remediation, which would basically be dealing with the soils that's been impacted by the petroleum and other byproducts of the airport, as well as removing storage drums from that old airport site. The next project is $200,000 of general funds for the, we refer to the rapid reaction to highway safety features. This allows us to deal with safety issues as they occur that need to be responded to quickly. They can be signs or striping or flashing lights, speed indicators, any of those types of things that need to be provided quickly to deal with an emergency or a safety issue on our roads. We had such an instance regarding the Susitna Valley High School when the high school burnt and the kids had to be moved to the other side of the park's highway, and we needed to find a way to deal with getting those kids across the highway. So it was putting up flashers and turn lanes and those types of things, and this is that type of project that this would go towards.
So this is a new and expanded program?
Yeah, yes, Mr. Chairman, that would be a new item that we have not requested previously. The next project is $2.6 million of general funds for resource development roads. We, as you may be aware, that we have received these fundings in the past and used them for various projects to access resource development or economic development opportunities, whether it be in the area of mining or timber development or along those lines. We have used the funds for the Glacier Creek Road, the Rock Creek Mine in Nome, Williamsport to Pile Bay, Ketchikan to Shelter Cove, Shirley Town Bridge, just to name a few of the projects that we've been using those particular funds for.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we know what roads will be targeted for these specific funds?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we've developed a set of criteria and a process for accepting nominations for the roads that would be considered for that. So we have now established a review and award type of process to identify the roads that would be appropriate for these fundings. So we do not have a list of proposed roads.
With the $3 million that was allocated last year, we felt we wanted to get input from communities, private sector, and businesses to identify what they felt where the funds would best be used. So we developed a set of criteria over the interim. We then had those criteria out for public comment, and as Nancy has said, we have now received a fairly good response from the public in terms of what roads they would like to see these funds used for, and so now we're going to go through using that scoring criteria to rank those roads to be able to use the existing funds.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you do that in conjunction with the Department of Natural Resources as well, I'm assuming?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, Department of Natural Resources has actually been one of the major recipients of these funds, and so we asked them to review the criteria and to nominate projects where it would benefit for, say, forest land development.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How is this not considered corporate welfare? And do the business enterprises have any obligation to pay any cost, any portion of the project? And you said it's the, you talked to the public and to business enterprises to nominate the projects for funding. Whose opinion matters most?
Through the chair, Senator Ellis, what we are doing with the criteria and the project selection process is akin to what we do for our harbor program, for our current STIP, where we get nominations from the public, including the private sector, on terms of what roads are needed and what improvements may be needed to specific roads. For the use of the resource development funds, it is, the goal was essentially to be able to open up access to state lands or activities that would generate jobs and provide for resource extraction for the state. So overall, there would be a benefit to the citizens, but through the use of the funds by job creation and or resource extraction. So in the criteria, we look at the resources that are being developed, we look at the cost per mile, we look at access competition between the mode, whether or not there was a highway need versus a marine highway need. So it's going to be a weighting and a judgment. We had had those criteria out for public review, asking for folks to identify if there was needs to change those criteria. We're now receiving those, or have received all of those comments, and we're going to be then creating that criteria for the scoring of those projects.
Go ahead, Chairman, if I could follow up. I guess I would be less opposed if the mining industry paid a fair share, or paid much of anything, to the state treasury. So there's going to be a state expense. There will be some sort of benefit to communities or jobs. But in terms of the state treasury, if the road to resources are directed toward mining industry, and I'm not against mining, I'm just against spending money that the private sector doesn't really contribute back to the general fund from that industry. So I hope you'll keep that in mind, and I guess it's an obligation of the legislature to fix the mining taxation system in our state, because it's a joke.
Through the chair, Senator Ellis, I would be remiss if I didn't say that the use of the funds appropriated previously did not go specifically just for mining. It was for forestry, it was for mines, and it was for oil and gas. So it's across the spectrum of resource development that the funds have been used. And we're going to look at what has been presented to us. And if, again, the funding available right now is only $3 million. That doesn't go necessarily very far in creating a new road.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just conclude by saying this is an area of interest, something we should watch carefully, because it's a foothold in the state budget. I'm not arguing that it shouldn't be there in some magnitude, but some industries pay their fair share, more than their fair share, to the state treasury, and we depend on them greatly. Other industries don't even come close. So we ought to keep that in mind and context.
Okay. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can we get a list of those particular projects that are being considered, at least, or that would be considered?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, yes, we'll be glad to provide that list.
Great, thanks.
And we'll also, I think we've got a sheet that shows some of the historic, so we'll not only look forward, but we will look back with the data for the members.
Next project, $100,000 in general funds requested for Southeast Ice Control chemical storage tank replacements in Petersburg and Kluwak. This would provide steel storage tanks to house the ice control chemicals we have right now. That the tanks that we currently use are are wearing out, they're leaking, they need to be replaced. This gives us the funds to do that. Let's see. The next project is $15 million for state equipment fleet replacement These are funds, the fund source is Highway Working Capital Funds. That is, those are the funds that were received from the user agencies to replace existing vehicles that, whether it be our heavy equipment on the roads or whether it's trooper vehicles or vans or cars that the other state agencies are using.
I think I missed one.
I'm sorry.
Back up page 42. Or do we go over that? There's a zeroing?
Mr. Chairman, that's the sidewalk snow removal equipment that was in our original request, and in the amendment it was zeroed out.
Okay. Now, it's my understanding that under the federal mandates that the snow removal on the bike lanes and sidewalks are the responsibility of the state if we use federal funds in building those. And how do we plan on meeting that obligation? Or if that obligation doesn't exist, maybe you can enlighten us a little.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that you received some correspondence recently from, again, the Federal Highway Administration regarding the responsibilities that the state has to maintain facilities that we construct, specifically sidewalks. And they were presenting to us the need to be able to perform maintenance, year-round maintenance on these facilities. We are currently in Sitka providing snow removal, utilizing existing plow trucks, pickup plow trucks where we can and as time allows. We had hoped to be able to use the funding that this project would provide to provide a specialized piece of equipment that would have been, more efficient to use. So what it means is if we do not receive the funding, then we'll fall back to our existing equipment.
Yeah, the question wasn't specifically targeted towards one community in this, you referenced Sitka, but my understanding from previous testimony on other bills that the snow removal maintenance issue is done in Anchorage and done in Juneau. And we've got a lot of other communities around the state that are having federal funded sidewalks and bike lanes. And so is this an issue that just gonna end up snowballing on us, that we don't recognize that this is an obligation and one day we get up and we have to deal with it? Or how are we gonna handle that?
Mr. Chairman, we are working specifically with the Fed Highway Administration and identifying our existing facilities and how we are maintaining them. What they asked of us was to identify our plan in maintaining them, meaning what frequency and priority that we're going to address those needs with. So we are providing that information and communications back to Fed Highways. The specific areas of Anchorage and Southeast, last year we were provided an appropriation to buy specific equipment for the sidewalk snow removal in Anchorage. That came at the behest of the legislature, and the funding was provided to us, and we did purchase that equipment. So this year we are providing that sidewalk maintenance in Anchorage. Now, in Southeast, we also received one of the specialized pieces of equipment here in Juneau, and that is now being used. I saw it out in operation last week during the snow events. So we are in communication with Fed Highways. We know that their intention is for us to maintain the facilities that we have. If we hear back from them that the frequency and the plans that we have for maintaining those facilities is not sufficient to meet the intent of their regulations, then we'll be addressing that through a capital and operating budget request to the legislature.
So we should we not then expect every year a request in for one of these machines, or for instance in the island communities, or maybe communities that are closely associated by road, the machine would move from community to community? Or
Mr. Chairman, in regards to what best piece of equipment is necessary to perform it, it really depends on the design and actual construction of the bike path. In many instances, if the bike path is contiguous with the road surface, we can knock it off with our truck plows. If it is separated and you have narrow confines like Indian River Bridge in Sitka, where you can't get a pickup plow through, then we'll need a specialized piece of equipment to be able to address some of those constraints. The challenge that we have with adding equipment, specialized equipment to the fleet, is again, falls back to that issue of maintenance funding. Because you then, when you add a piece of equipment, then you also have the operating expenses, but also future replacement expenses, which adds to the challenge of the maintenance and operations operating budget.
Okay. And we go on to page 43, I guess. We'll get back on sequence.
Yes, 43, Mr. Chairman, that's the state equipment fleet replacement, the $15 million from the highway working capital funds. And as I said, this is to replace all vehicles within the system, and based on the revenues that are received from the user agencies and based on a schedule of when the life of the vehicles are such that they're up for replacement. The next project is $200,000 in general funds for a statewide anti-icing program. This would provide funding for basically the anti-icing primarily in southeast region that's currently using mag chloride, and this would allow them to use sodium chloride brine, which would hopefully reduce our operating costs on the anti-icing costs by about 50%. This provides the storage tanks and piping and the additional applicator equipment that's needed to dispense these liquids.
Will this dissolve our cars?
Mr. Chairman, it will be sodium chloride that is used across the nation, that is used to remove snow and ice. So this will be, again, regular NaCl. We aren't looking at the products that would have rust inhibitors. That would be calcium chloride.
Right. So we shouldn't get any adverse effects?
Mr. Chairman, sodium chloride is, again, generates rust.
Mr. Chairman.
Undercoating. Yes.
Go ahead, Senator.
As you look at sodium chloride, obviously it's going to cause more rust with the iron. It's just one of the chemical facts that are out there. What kind of negative effect does it do actually to the asphalt that is on the road, and the deterioration of that asphalt as we look at things like potholes and the resurfacing that needs to be done after that, compared to magnesium chloride or calcium chloride?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, to my knowledge, the sodium chloride does not have an adverse effect on the asphalt surface. It is used, as I said, across the nation, and to my knowledge, there isn't deterioration from the use of that on the highway surface. Now, there is always a concern on the bridges that you'll have penetration of sodium chloride into the existing rebar system. So that's why we are using anti-icing agents on the bridges, we are not using sodium chloride. We're using other potassium acetate, less corrosive materials, so that they are not impacting the bridge infrastructure. This program here, as Nancy suggested, it would be similar to what we're doing on the airport side, where we're buying bulk urea and then mixing it ourselves to create a liquid urea for use on the airports. This will allow us to buy bulk sodium chloride to produce a salt brine for use on the highways in the temperature ranges that it will work. Sodium chloride does not allow us to be used as an anti-icing agent down below, I believe it's 22 to 25 degrees, whereas magnesium chloride can be used down to negative numbers.
That was my next question, Mr. Chairman. What is it going to do to the bridges? But you've assured me that it's not going to be used in these bridges or in that area where it will cause deterioration, not so much of the rebar that's in the concrete, but the actual steel structure that we're trying to go ahead and protect.
That's correct. We don't want to generate a problem with our bridges.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If the state went forward with a plan to de-ice the roads with some chemical that wouldn't dissolve the automobiles, what kind of cost increase is it going to be to the state?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that we, on the airports, we use potassium acetate that does not have the corrosion factors of a chloride, but the cost difference is significantly higher. I believe that we are currently buying magnesium chloride that has some rust inhibitors in it, and we're probably getting it here delivered in the $1.10 to $1.25 a gallon range. I believe that potassium acetate in our is being delivered in our rural areas for up to $3 to $3.50 a gallon. So it has a considerable cost difference.
The next project, Mr. Chairman, is $1 million of general funds for the statewide emergency bridge repair. As Frank had mentioned earlier, this is to deal with emergency repairs that could be caused by a variety of issues, mostly in the area of high water or wind or whatever. The next project is $2,500,000 in general funds for statewide rural airport safety improvements. We've received this over the last few years to deal with safety issues at our rural airports, and it gives you an idea of what we use the FY08 funding for: South Naknek runway repairs, Chignik Lagoon runway repairs, an Alaska traffic gate replacement, which was a much needed item, Lyme Airport surface repairs, Bethel Airport fence, then some McCarthy and Chitna safety improvements, and the list goes on. You can see that there's a variety of items that were used. So this helps us take care of a fairly small safety issues that need to be resolved and that cannot be cannot wait for a federal project to deal with.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
As we look at the first one, South Naknek Airport repairs, what are the long-term plans for maintaining two airports there in Naknek? Are you going to continue to do that in the foreseeable future, or is there a plan when either the population or the usage of the South Naknek Airport becomes minimal that you're going to plow it under?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the communities of South Naknek and Naknek truly love their airport and the ability. Right now, with the need to essentially provide access for the school kids in South Naknek to Naknek, that's where kids are flown every day from South Naknek across the river to Naknek to get to the school. The need for both airports is there. There's been a master plan, believe, developed for South Naknek and Naknek in conjunction with and looking at a Naknek river crossing. The ultimate goal is, if there is ever a hard link generated, that this Naknek Airport and South Naknek Airports may not be needed, because King Salmon would be there and is essentially an all-weather 24-hour facility able to accommodate jet and emergency traffic. We have had, over the years, lots of discussions with the Bristol Bay Borough about taking over ownership of Naknek. It's a very complicated real estate transaction with the state as an owner, local individuals as owners, and the local native corporation as part owners for the surrounding properties. So there's boundary crossing issues, and our desire would be to ultimately be able to relieve ourselves of the Naknek Airport, because it would take a fairly large relocation project to be able to build a new airport for Naknek. When 13 miles down the road, you have King Salmon, which is, again, as I said, a very good facility.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the next project is $1 million in general funds for the surfacing materials. These are crushed materials that are needed for maintenance projects on our highways. It basically, we're looking at it being used for major projects on the Taylor, Elliott, Denali, Tote Cutoff, Steese, Glen, Richardson, and Alaska highways. This allows us to go forward with acquiring these materials at on a contract basis, getting a good price for them, and then being able to use them on these projects. It cuts down on the cost of providing the surfacing materials when we can provide them in a large procurement rather than in individual project procurements. The next project is $348,000 in general funds for updating our stormwater pollution prevention plan and spill prevention control and countermeasure plans. These are plans that basically the Environmental Protection Agency is requiring us to update these plans before we can basically do any of our maintenance projects.
We're going to do one more and then we're going to go to at ease till 1:30. So I think the next one will be a nice spot to have a break.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The next project is $3 million in general funds for the Western Alaska Access Reconnaissance Study. This is to begin refining and detailing the analysis of a corridor out to the Seward Peninsula. We have been working on this particular study through, that's some funding through our Roads to Resources. It's funding that we've received previously, and this allows us to continue to look at alternative routes and potential economic benefits, the topographical and environmental issues associated with it, and land management considerations on moving forward with such a transportation corridor.
Don't take this as a negative position on this particular request, but in times of when we have challenges to our revenue stream, why shouldn't we take these monies and move them into maintenance? Deal with the corridor studies in times when we have a little extra revenue.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it was the goal of the governor to be able to advance this project because it is such a, there's a long gestation period for this project because of the major scope and the amount of mileage that we'd be looking to construct moving westward, that we needed to start at some point, and that she felt that it would, that with the ongoing work, there was a good segue into doing the next phase, which was going to be that reconnaissance level, which would take, it would be a multi-year effort to be able to do some of the studies to get an idea of the meteorological data as well as hydrological data, and then also looking at particular route selection by acquiring some of the aerial photography, and then looking truly at the land ownership issues that we may have in moving westward towards Nome.
I understand that. And then this is Alaska Housing Capital Corp. That's the source of funds.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it is.
I think the committee will probably have a difference of opinion as far as sources of funds, but we'll deal with that as we go forward. Do we have any final questions, Senator Olson?
And I don't have to have an answer to this now, Mr. Chairman, but I got contacted a couple weeks ago by one of the 135 carriers that said that there was a situation out in Cogilligan, I want to say, either Kong or Quigg, where the airport was not being maintained because of maybe some ownership dispute or problems that were out there. And I just want to know an answer. What are your plans for, I think, the 400 or 500 feet of the, I think, Quigilinguk Airport? Sometime later on, either privately or otherwise, I'd like to hear an answer to that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We will provide that answer, Mr. Chairman, unless you'd like me to address it now.
No, not now.
Okay.
And the spin me up on this request dealing with the STIP. The $3 million.
How did it, the question is whether, how it ties in with the STIP?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, the STIP is the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program is a planning document that's required of us for use of federal highway funds under Title 23. So that is where we must provide the identification of the projects and the work activities that we're going to be utilizing federal funds to accomplish for those projects. That STIP, the STIP is again a requirement of the Federal Highway and Federal Transit Authorities, so it is really identifies the federal program that we have and how we're going to spend the money.
Right, and I think, would we not then expect this to appear in the STIP in future years after we go through this planning process? Or is this going to be a general fund, large capital item coming at us?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the STIP process would require then that we have it's fiscally constrained, meaning that if we go forward with a project, then we have got to show where the funds are going to come from for that project. Mm-hmm. So at this particular point, we're doing the reconnaissance and level effort with general fund, so we're not utilizing the federal funds.
Oh, I understand that today, but I'm talking about several years later.
Mr. Chairman, I can't say just how we would proceed forward with funding at this point.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Part of the explanation for this project is the potential economic benefits, and I was wondering, along those same lines, does the administration have any plans to get access to the Donlin Creek region and the Pebble Mine region that clearly have shown great economic benefit, but there's still the decision on what might happen out there, but I'm wondering what plans are there for those areas?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the current planning level effort, Western Alaska Access, the southern boundary of that actually, I think, touches on the northern Kuskokwim or upper reaches of the Kuskokwim. So I believe that they are actually looking at the resources that are in existence out from, again, the Kuskokwim area northward towards the Ambler District and then westward towards Nome. So we're trying to identify and having those resources presented to us. Not just oil and gas in, say, the Nanana Basin, but also hard rock minerals, agricultural potential, or hydroelectric type potential, looking across the spectrum of potential resources that may be out there and accessible from a route westward.
Okay, well, that concludes our portion of our meeting this morning. We're going to stand at ease to the call of the chair. Targeted time is 1:30. We should be able to make that. We will finish up with DOT and we'll go on to the Department of Environmental Conservation and the Department of Health and Social Services. So we'll see everybody back at 1:30. We're at ease.